Sean Heyman, insider for MLB Network.
Chicago is watching carefully, no question about it.
New York Post columnist, Curb Your Enthusiasm enthusiast.
You hate people. Well, I hate people individually, but I love mankind.
John Heyman with Mully and Haw.
I'm going to endorse the point where I say you never know with the Cubs, but I'm going to retract the I like the White Sox.
On 670 The Score.
Welcome back. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Ruthie Polinsky is in for Mully today. We're having a good show, having a good time on a beautiful Tuesday morning in Chicago. Are you?
I am having a great
good.
Time.
You're having a good time. Looks like it's going to be a beautiful day outside. The Sox are at home. Nice weather tonight. The Cubs are in Pittsburgh. Pregame right here on The Score beginning at 5:05 p.m. And time now to go out to our Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, new tires for spring. Aturo.com, where we find John Heyman from the MLB Network and the New York Post. Good morning, John. How are you?
Morning, John.
Good morning, John. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning. Congratulations on the weather. I get daily updates from my daughter up in Evanston. She couldn't believe it yesterday. Beautiful.
85 degrees yesterday.
Unbelievable. Unseasonably warm, as they say. The Cubs were off. That would have been a great day to be at Wrigley with the wind blowing out. But the Cubs had the day off, John, after losing 2 out of 3 to the Phillies. And here come the Reds. We feel good about Chicago. It feels like we're celebrating a lot, the Cubs starting 17-12 against the teeth of the schedule, and we know all the narratives. But the Reds have won 5 in a row, 16-13, a game back in the Central. Terry Francona is doing it again.
He's amazing, Hall of Fame manager. I mean, he laid down the law. You know, he had brought accountability to the Reds. I thought they were handicapped for years with the managing situation that they did have, and he is terrific. You know, he's got guys, Noelvi, Marte, guys performing who are kind of got him on the straight now, getting going. So the Reds certainly are a threat. I will say this about the Cubs. They are even better than that 17-12 record I saw on Twitter. So I got to give Brooks Gate credit for this. They have not played a team with a losing record yet. Not only that, three of their opponents, the Diamondbacks, Dodgers, and Padres, account for 20 of their games so far. So, wow. Like two-thirds of their games are against three powerhouses, and they're 17-12. So, I mean, the Cubs are doing it. I know 17-12 sounds good, but it's better than we think.
The record is the record, John, and I wonder, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier on in our show about the urgency right now to sort of figure out maybe some of their weaknesses, third base, bullpen, et cetera. The urgency maybe feels more urgent because of what the Reds are doing. What's your assessment of sort of how quickly the Cubs need to kind of stay on top?
Yeah, I have great faith in the Cubs and what they've done, considering the competition. Looking at the teams on paper, I feel like the Cubs are the better team. They're the more solid team. Crow Armstrong really coming into his own. I think that they're obviously Tucker's been fantastic, and hopefully they get something done and keep him long term. The entire outfield's been really productive. Bush has been really good. They're getting amazing stuff from Kelly. Starting pitching is good. Obviously, losing Steele doesn't help, but I feel like on paper the Cubs are a better team, and I think they have a great manager too. I think Council is terrific. I mean, that's one of the best managing divisions. I think Murphy with Milwaukee, Council with the Cubs, and Francona with the Reds are three of the top 10 managers in baseball.
Who's got a third baseman for auction, because the Cubs need to start the bidding? That is a big problem, John. That's the one area where you look at that lineup and you don't feel good about it. You could make the argument the bullpen is a bigger concern. Certainly closer to the trade deadline will revive the conversation about how you replace Justin Steele. That hasn't been an issue yet with Colin Ray being lights out, but what is the appropriate level of concern about the third base spot, and how would you address it?
I would make that argument that the bullpen is the biggest concern that they do have. I would put third base next, certainly. I'm not giving up on Shaw. I feel like, he's going to be able to hit at this level, even though he hasn't done it to this point, even in the minors. So, I mean, I think maybe in the second half, maybe he'll be ready to help them. But, I put that as their second biggest concern. I did hear a scout say that it's their black hole. The scout loves the Cubs. He thought the Cubs are outstanding. He did call third base the black hole. I'm more concerned about the bullpen, though. I do think the bullpen is huge, particularly nowadays when they're really only a handful of pitchers who throw six innings consistently, sometimes seven or eight. The bullpen is huge, and that's really my worry with the Cubs more than third base.
What's sort of the time frame, John, that the Cubs can address those issues?
Yeah, I mean, the bullpen could be addressed potentially earlier than rotation. If you have a rotation issue, you probably have to wait because teams, no matter how bad they are, they don't want to show that they're out of it right away and trade somebody from their rotation. Right? If you trade someone from your rotation, you're basically sending up the white flag, sending a signal to everybody, including fans, that you're out of it. And probably nobody wants to do that. At least we get into the middle of June. So bullpen guys can be picked up, can be traded. Obviously, Pomerantz was a guy who was picked up. The guys can be picked up a little bit earlier with the bullpen, but you know, some of those really bad teams, they don't have good starters or good bullpen, so it could be a little weight. That's why my concern is with the bullpen. And you're not going to find high leverage guys to shut down closers or anything like that anytime soon.
How are the Mets 20-9 with a pitching staff that has been lights out and guys who you don't expect to be pitching as well as they have been pitching?
The Mets. You're talking about the
Mets. Yes,
Mets.
Yeah, the Mets.
I mean, no one would have thought the Mets would be 20-9 and that their pitching would be like this. The starting rotation to be a 2-3 ERA, incredible. I'm not sure how they're doing it. David Stearns came in there and he really has a strategy of not, even though they have a lot of money. Steve Cohen is the richest owner in baseball. They could spend a lot. They do not target this. Top starters. They didn't even look at Fried. They didn't look at Burns. Fried's doing unbelievable, by the way, Cy Young candidate. But they didn't look at those guys. They feel like they can improve certain guys who are pitching elsewhere and not doing particularly well. I mean, Canning was a guy basically released by the Angels, and he is amazing. I mean, he's been incredible. McGill's been really good. It's really a shock how good the Mets have been.
Can we switch gears to the South side, David? Are you ready for that?
Sure.
Okay. I wanted to ask about Gage Workman getting picked up by the Sox, obviously from the Cubs. And also we were talking about Tim Elko, John, who has hit 5 home runs since Thursday in the minors. Isn't it about time that the Sox just bring up and get the help wherever they can?
Well, I think the Sox are all about development. So however they think guys are going to develop best, that's how they have to do it. They can't really worry about wins and losses now. They already got the record for most losses. They can't worry. It's really got to be about the future more than now. Yeah, I'm surprised that the Cubs and the White Sox are able to make trades. The New York teams don't often trade with each other, but apparently they have a nice relationship in Chicago. People are a little nicer in the Midwest, and they're willing to help out the brethren over on the other side of town. We do not see that in New York. So good for the Cubs and the White Sox that they are able to make even big trades. I mean, Quintana was a big trade at that time, and I know this is a smaller trade, but Mets and Yankees can't get it together. So good for the Chicago team.
Chris Getz and Jed Hoyer are practically neighbors, I think, on the North Shore. So I think maybe they struck a deal walking their dogs or something. It seems like they have a very friendly relationship, professionally and otherwise. And Gage Workman wasn't working out for the Cubs. He had 2 errors, John, in a big loss. So I think that kind of sealed his fate.
Yeah, I mean, he came in, I think it was Rule 5.
Yeah.
He came in and won the job, or a job. And, right, I mean, you wouldn't think one bad team would seal their fate, but, obviously the White Sox see something. I think the White Sox, as I've been saying on here, I think they're on the right track. It's maybe not the right speed, the speed that Mully would like, but they are on the right track. They are picking up guys who will be able to help them eventually. I love that trade with Crochet. They did the right thing holding on to him, trading him later. They got a lot more there. Trade with the Angels with Giolito. I mean, they've got a catcher that looks like he could be a catcher of the future. I mean, they two catchers in the of the future. That most teams don't have that, and Theis has actually been okay too, as well. So they're pretty good on the catching front. I think they've got potential on the pitching front. They just need to get some more hitters. That's their issue. Easier said than done. It's not easy to develop hitters for the major leagues, but that's what they got to do, really.
Here's what's interesting too, John. You talk about the Sox being in developmental mode, and everybody understands that. Over the weekend in Sacramento, Will Venable started three straight relief pitchers, three straight openers. They're hosting the Brewers tonight for the beginning of a series there. The Brewers, with Craig Counsell, they were one of the teams, along with the Rays, that kind of started that trend. And I'm very curious to see what happens next with the Sox, because it worked with Jonathan Cannon, who was a starter that wasn't very consistent early on. He came on in the second inning, pitched 7 2/3, and was very effective. It worked for the most part with the other two attempts. Is this something that is going to be revived, do you think, around the league? Starters don't go as deep as they used to, and using openers might be a way for a manager to buy an inning or two from a relief pitcher because he likes the matchup.
Yeah, I mean, that was a trend, you're right, started early by Tampa and Milwaukee, and it's an effective trend. The bullpen is huge. I mean, teams are struggling keeping pitchers healthy. So, you know, you're going to have to rotate guys. I mean, the Dodgers are at the forefront of this, you know. They've got all sorts of stars hurting, and they're going, I think, again today with a bullpen game. They had four bullpen games in the playoffs and ended up winning the World Series and winning five games. So this is a trend that has continued. And, you know, I'd rather see great starters. You know, going back to my childhood, it was great when Seaver and Gibson would match up. I know it's a long time ago, but even more recently than that, we'd have pitchers go distances. But this is a strategy that teams are employing, and effectively.
When you look at the Brewers, who are in town tonight, and you see Jose Quintana, 4-0. He didn't sign until March 5th. He had a $4.5 million contract. Is there any kind of, are there any other Jose Quintanas out there that are unsigned, John? How surprised are you that this is a guy that just seems to be, he's been around for a very long time now. He started with the White Sox. Actually, I think he started with the Mets. Or started with the Yankees organization, then he ends up with the White Sox and pitch for the Cubs, still going at it at a very high level. We lost John.
Oh, we lost John.
Lost John. Just when I was getting a chance to celebrate Jose Quintana, the former Met pitcher too. The Mets don't miss him, John. But Jose Quintana, 4-0 for the Brewers. How surprised are you?
Many columns in spring training that they need to go get Quintana. The Mets do. He wanted to be a Met. He was out there for everybody. You know, he's 4-0 with a 1-1 ERA. Now, his whip and his hits per inning and things like that don't add up to that ERA. He's still a very effective pitcher. I mean, uses brains more than anything. You know, it's kind of funny, all these guys who are very smart baseball people, they look at velo and they don't look at brains for a pitcher. And this guy works around his stuff and is very effective.
We'll let you go, but on the way out, so you mentioned the Dodgers. Tyler Glasnow now on the injured list. Blake Snell also there. Ohtani's not ready to get in the rotation just yet. The Dodgers, nobody's really talking about them being having an unfair advantage with their payroll anymore. They're just looking at them in a tough division and their ability to possibly win it. Have they come back down to earth in your mind, or is this just a temporary blip?
I think it's a temporary blip, but, I mean, it's quite a blip, right? You've got guys on the IL right now, Glasnow, Snell, Kershaw, not available till May 18th. Ohtani will be a second half pitcher. I mean, that's we're talking four stars to superstars. I mean, I think three of them are basically superstars. Five Cy Youngs, three MVPs that they're missing. You know, even with a $399 million payroll, you can have issues, and they certainly do. Now, they have a great bullpen as well. They have great lineup too, so they have so many things going for them. It's going to cover up, and they're still going to probably win 2/3 of their games. And let's not forget, they won the World Series last year, as I mentioned, throwing those bullpen games. They had Flaherty, who allegedly had a back condition. I don't think it really revealed itself. Yamamoto had been coming off his shoulder. Mueller, second, Tommy John, and they were able to win the World Series. You got Freeman, Betts, and Ohtani hitting. you know, you're in pretty good shape. You're going to win a lot of games no matter what your pitching looks like. But, you know, they're stocked up with bullpen guys. They're stocked up with starters. But, you know, not many teams could survive this kind of injury epidemic. But I think the Dodgers are one that can do that.
John, thanks so much for your time. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, John.
All right. Great talking to you guys.
See John later. Heyman from the New York Post and MLB Network talking baseball. And his daughter does go to Northwestern, so she is familiar with the Midwest temperatures we're enjoying this week. Finally, it seems like spring slash summer has arrived.
Oh, it's like people don't know how to act out there.
Big night tonight at the Rate, 35th and Shields. The Brewers are in town, and I think you get a good chance to take a look at them from a Cubs perspective because they are lurking in third place. You never quite rule them out of the NL Central. The Reds are a big surprise with Terry Francona. Now the manager, they've won five in a row. They're just a game back of the Cubs. And I agree that we should all be encouraged by the Cubs' strong start because they have yet to play a team with a losing record. Was that the statistic?
Yeah.
That's quite a thing. But I still have concerns about some things in their lineup with the third base spot we talked about in Dansby Swanson. So a good chance to get tonight to get a look at the Brewers and how tough they might be and what they look like after losing Corbin Burns and this being the a Pat Murphy team in his second season, still overachieving.
A lot of the Cubs, I think it's an important reminder that a lot of the Cubs' thrilling wins that have come in the late innings are because other teams are also having bullpen issues, right? Like there's you can't have these late comebacks if other teams' bullpens are solid. So I think it's an important reminder how hard it is to have just a perfect bullpen, especially this time of year. And it's something that could potentially work itself out.
By the way, you earlier in the show were making fun of, is that an accurate way to describe it? Making fun of Dansby Swanson's hair?
Hold on.
A little bit? Or
what?
Were you praising it?
I don't make fun of people on the radio.
Okay.
I love Dansby Swanson's hair. Dustin said his family loves Dansby Swanson's hair.
But did you see the commercial on DirecTV where Dansby Swanson has no hair?
No.
I know this is radio, but we're describing it. Dansby Swanson bald
what?
For a DirecTV commercial.
I haven't
yes.
seen it. I'm going to look at it in the break.
You will cringe.
I will retweet it.
Oh, boy.
What will your family think of your retweet and looking at Dansby Swanson with that beautiful, beautiful, luscious head of hair no longer there on his head?
Can he use that oil that he oils the gloves with to protect his head from the SUVs?
I don't know. You have to ask somebody who regularly does that.
On Sunday Night Baseball, I mean, boy, that was a drinking game about the oiling up of the glove on Sunday Night Baseball.
So you would use the same oil for your scalp?
I'm asking the four-letter network.
I don't know. Get Cap on the phone. Maybe he would tell us.
No shot.
Take that. No, I think that's a good question. Maybe Dansby can answer.
I just retweeted it at Mully and Haw on X.
Hey, speaking of ranters, by the way, Lee Elia, this is the 42nd anniversary of the Lee Elia rant. Grobber, I was there. He was there. Les Grobstein in Lee Elia, the former manager of the Cubs office after the game. I think Mark Jean Greco also was in attendance. That was an epic sports moment for Chicago Cubs fans, baseball fans, sports fans, and they remember it. And do we have that, Brandon? Do we want to play the Lee Elia rant for the 42nd anniversary, so 42 years ago today?
They talk about the great support that the players get around here. I haven't seen it this year. The name of the game is hit the ball, catch the ball, and get the job done. Right now, we have more losses than we have wins. The changes that have happened in the Cub organization are multifold. All right, they don't show because we're 5-14. And unfortunately, that's the criteria of them dumb 15% that come out to date baseball. The other 85% are earning a living.
Ouch. Lee Elia, 42 years ago today, that would be his last season as a manager of the Cubs. He would go on to manage the Phillies, though. And so he was, that wasn't his last job. He got a job after that. Had you heard that before?
Never heard it before.
Yeah, it goes on a little bit longer, but we're going to condense.
There's more to come before 10 o'clock.
Oh, great.
There's more to come before 10 o'clock.
More before 10.
That's a tease, listeners. That's a tease. You want to keep listening. because you're going to get your chance to win your way to see our show live Friday, May 16th at the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Stage. Be part of the studio audience as we get you set for the start of the Crosstown Series with special guests and plenty of Cubs, Sox, chatter. Plus, popcorn will be provided by Nuts on Clark, and I might even pop a batch or two myself.
David Hawes.
If that's part of the plan.
Bacon grease. Cooking with hot bacon grease.
That's right. Thank you, Ben Johnson. Maybe Ben Johnson will show up. You talk about cooking with grease.
We might have to send him a bag. We may have to send him a bag. See if
he
that we could build a relationship with him through bacon grease.
I don't know if popcorn travels that well.
It's not that far.
Yeah, I feel like he's a super healthy eater. Doesn't he feel give you the vibes?
He's got to stay healthy so he can do the squats. So he can do all the squats and work out in the morning. Yeah, that's, I think, cooking with hot grease. Cooking with hot bacon grease. That's what we're going to be doing Friday the morning, the 16th. All brought to you by the Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois. Through it all, we're going to be in the performance stage. That'll be fun. And the kitchen, the accompanying kitchen. So that'll be a lot of fun, May 16th. All right, we come back. You want to hear this audio from Steve Smith, the former NFL wide receiver, on Luther Burden III. It's the kind of thing, you talk about a burden, it is one that he will carry into the NFL. And I think it is very interesting to hear. We'll listen to that next. Ruthie Polinsky is in for Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Well, ask the ankles.
What's your assessment of Luther?
Luther? Stud. Yeah, I mean, you saw the highlights, right? I mean, he's a playmaker waiting to happen. I mean, went to the same high school, I believe, as Jameson Williams. J-Mo texted me right after we took him. And he said, you got a dog just like me, you know? And so Luther has that same confidence. He's got that same swagger to him. For 6 foot, 200 plus pounds, it's rare to see somebody with his movement skills. He can stop on a dime and accelerate just like that. Give him a little bit of space and he can make big things happen. And so a dangerous player, weapon, call him what you want, but I see big things in his future.
Welcome back. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Ruthie Polinsky's in for Mully today. That was Ben Johnson talking about second-round draft pick Luther Burden III from Missouri, who I think is one of the more intriguing players in this draft class. And Ruthie, he comes from East St. Louis. We know that the comparison to Jameson Williams is an apt one, and not just because they come from the same hometown, but because they both represent players who entered the NFL with a little bit of baggage, some questions about their behavior, and both guys on the field are dynamic playmakers mm-hmm. that can change a game with one play.
These are two players that have overcome tremendous adversity to get to where they are. And I think that needs to be reminded when people are questioning maybe the, you know, quote unquote, attitude or work ethic. These are people who have not had anything handed to them. So I think it's important. It's College Game Day did a really fantastic feature on Luther Burden last season that I think it's worth everyone's time just to kind of see where he comes from, where he grew up.
What did you take away from that?
Just what I said, that I think it's someone who's really aware of the situation that he's come into and aware of where he came from and wants to make sure that other kids have the same opportunities that he was given and he's giving back to the community that he's from.
Well, I think he's also got to be aware of, and I'm sure he is, the stigma that I think surrounds him and the mm-hmm. baggage he brings into the National Football League, created by characterizations of his behavior that come from the evaluation of guys like Steve Smith. Steve Smith he works for the NFL Network. He's a respected analyst. He was a terrific wide receiver. Bears fans still remember him ruining their season back in 2005, I believe it was, in a playoff game where he was the guy they could not stop. Steve Smith has never met, from what I understand, Luther Burden III, but he did have a very scathing evaluation of the young man based on what he saw on tape, and his opinion is a respected one, so it's worth listening to when evaluating Luther Burden III.
If he doesn't get the ball when he believes he should, becomes unfocused.
Okay.
Explosive with the ball in his hands. You get a lot of usage out of him, at times, they seem to force the ball to him. This is the criticism right now.
Okay.
Against bigger and physical teams, didn't answer the bell with the same energy.
When we look at all this, Steven, obviously these guys are moldable, right? This is a work in progress. You say that all the time.
You hope some are.
Yes, you hope you are. And obviously the more moldable the player is, the more coachable he is, the more you want him in your room.
Yes, sir.
If you're the position coach specifically, certain traits are correctable. Certain traits are correctable by the individual.
Correct.
Because it's a lot of want to.
You have to be willing to change, desire to change. You also got to be able to look in the mirror. Right. And know, True. You know, hey, I'm speaking from experience. You got to look at who's the common denominator. It can't always be. Right.
Yeah.
Hey, man, you used to hear, man, Miss Susie don't like me. She failed me.
Yeah.
But Mr. Lovin', I got an A. So Miss Susie failed me. But when you get an A, it's me. When you fail, it's her. Right. And so that's I don't know him. I have never met him. I haven't had a discussion with him. Haven't had a conversation with him. He may want or want not have a conversation with me based off this evaluation. You know. Mm-hmm. Either way, don't matter.
Steve Smith on a podcast, I believe, with James Palmer from the NFL Network, his scathing review of Luther Burden III.
Mm-hmm.
What stands out to me about that evaluation, I'm sorry, but the last thing that he said, I've never met him. Those are a heck of conclusions to reach about somebody you've never met. I mean, it's one thing to suggest or to notice that somebody doesn't finish plays or they're a less willing blocker or, boy, he reacted negatively after not getting the ball thrown his way, but he spoke with such certainty. I assumed until he said that, that he had perhaps
experiences with him. Or,
yeah.
All I know is Ben Johnson, Antoine Randall-El, they looked pretty fired up to get this guy when they drafted him.
Well, all coaches think that they can save the world.
Of
right?
course, yeah.
And they can rescue
A lot of them do.
Yeah.
I think that gets lost in this. So I have high hopes for Luther Burden. I have high hopes for what he can be in this Chicago Bears offense. And, you know, you look at a Jameson Williams, who I think is still a work in progress when it comes, you know, we have the iconic clip of Antoine Randall-El getting in his face, right?
On the sideline
during a game, coaching him up and telling him what to do. And you saw Jameson Williams take that. I just think there are good situations for certain players. I think Antoine Randall-El will be a great, great, great coach for this guy.
Will you watch Luther Burden III much closer now that you hear these kinds of things said about him? Won't he be the guy that you're looking at and whose locker will be maybe crowded after a game where he is targeted only twice? Or is that he's only a rookie, you can't expect these kinds of things? I just think he enters – I don't know that it's a fair label yet or not,
mm-hmm.
because I didn't watch a lot of Missouri football. What you see on tape are the best of him. So you see, and what he's capable of accomplishing.
You don't entertain yourself with low-level SEC play like Brad Biggs. He doesn't watch low-level Big Ten play. Or what do you say? What do you call it?
I think he's taking a little bit of a veiled shot at Rutgers, and maybe a not-so-veiled shot at Rutgers.
I'm pretty sure that
Biggsy has probably watched every snap of Mizzou football for the past 25 years.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
He doesn't watch a lot of, you know, lower-tier Big Ten football.
Ouch. That was a shot at Rutgers and Greg Schiano.
Yeah, he watches Mizzou.
The Rutgers.
The Rutgers University.
I love Brad Biggs. That's all I have to say.
Okay, is that all you have to say? You have anything more you want to say about Biggs?
No.
You can. I'm sure he'd love to hear it.
Yeah, whatever.
He's a very affable personality. Good friend. Friend of the program.
Valued.
Valued friend. Yes, longtime friend. You listen to the
Who
intro.
Who knew Ruthie was a P1?
She's a P1.
You guys, what do you think I listen to every morning?
Ruthie's a P1. Yeah. Well, you never want to miss it. You never miss a little, miss a lot. right? Isn't that the slogan?
I need to prep myself for the big pro football show so I know what David's takes are going to be. At 5:30. Sometimes they change, though.
Sometimes they change, Ruthie. You know, there's
a lot can happen between 10 a.m. and 5:30 p.m.
They don't change that much. They will be just maybe a little bit more either muted or exaggerated.
That much.
They don't change that much, perhaps. I think the more I hear, though, about Luther Burden III, and the more I hear people kind of question him, I really find myself almost pulling for him to succeed.
Yeah.
Because I know I'm guilty of it as well. When you make snap judgments based on a small sample size of a couple maybe games or a couple or an outburst here or there, and you make a very quick judgment on the future potential of a prospect. I think Luther Burden III, Steve Smith is not an opinion to dismiss, because I think it carries some weight in the league. He's obviously, it's what he does for a living now, and he's a respected analyst based on the fact that he was a terrific player. So that's not going to go away anytime soon. You like that he brings an edge into the NFL. You like that he's going to carry a burden, if you will, into the league. Mm-hmm. And I think when you look at his potential from a physical standpoint, the Bears being able to put him in the best position to succeed from a schematic standpoint, this could be fun. It could be fun to watch him thrive, and it could be fun to see him get the last laugh.
We didn't ever circle back on my take, but a lot of the success of these draft picks depends on Caleb Williams. And I don't ever want that to get lost, because I think that's important for everyone to just be reminded that...
All right, you want one of my hot takes here?
Oh, boy.
You are a pretty tough critic on Caleb Williams. You are more than a lot of people in town who do this for a living, and we do this for a living.
Yeah.
On the Big Pro Football Show every night at 5:30. You are there on the CHSN. You are tougher on Caleb Williams than I think...
an average Bears fan?
Yeah, I do think so.
I think that's fair.
I'm not saying you're wrong, but I think that is consistent.
I guess I'll just say I'm not really critical. I just don't want it ever to be lost on the fact that what happened last year was not solely on the coaching staff, not solely on the bad offensive line. Like
you're not totally sold on him yet.
No, no.
Okay,
I think he has a massively high ceiling. I think he can be a fantastic, great quarterback, Super Bowl winning quarterback in the NFL. But he needs to be a lot better than he was last year. And I think probably the Jaden Daniels thing brings me back down to earth.
Okay.
And honestly, Drake May had a great year for New England. I just think there you need to see some big strides in Caleb Williams. And the thing about this upcoming season is that now there really is no excuse.
You're right.
For
him
to take a massive jump.
It's an excellent point.
You got the coach.
Yep.
You got the interior offensive line figured out,
right,
which is really, I think, going to be the most important part of the offensive line for Caleb Williams. I know everyone loves to talk about the tackles, but for Caleb Williams, his size, his scramble ability, the interior offensive line, I think, is so, so crucial. And that's solid right now.
You know how I like to project in the playoffs, playoff situations,
yeah,
playoff teams. True or false, or you agree or disagree with this. If the Bears win a playoff game, the next playoff game the Bears win, Caleb Williams will be the quarterback of that team. Do you agree or disagree?
Agree.
Okay.
I agree.
I just want to know how far you're taking this.
Yeah. No. I am very excited that Caleb Williams is the quarterback of the Chicago Bears. I don't want that to get lost in this. But he needs to be a lot better than he was last year. And I think what everyone gets so excited about is the rhythm. The off-schedule plays and the scramble ability and the throws, incredible throws he makes. And you got to be able to make those throws to be a great quarterback in some ways. I want to see the on-time, you know, the footwork. We had Mike Tannenbaum, former general manager, now ESPN personality. We had him on our charter podcast for CHSN, and he called a couple games for the Bears on ESPN radio last season, and he said, all you have to do is watch him from the waist down. And if that is better this year, it's going to feel better. Just and I love
hearing. He called it a frenzied approach to football.
A frenzied, chaotic sort of approach. Mm-hmm. I want to see him get the ball out. Don't take sacks that you don't need to take. And maybe take more risks. We know Ben Johnson cares a lot about this EPA, EPA, EPA. It's okay to throw a couple interceptions, Caleb, if you're going to be able to, you know.
You just described Jared Goff. Mm. You just described if Caleb Williams can be like Jared Goff, then the Bears will be successful as an offense.
Yeah, and they have all the pieces to make it happen. So I don't want anyone to be like, Ruthie,
no,
Caleb,
I'm
hater.
Not saying that.
I'm not a hater. I just want to remind everyone that to me, David, and this is this might be a hot take for radio. To me, I think the biggest question mark going into this season is Caleb Williams' development. I don't think that's a crazy thing to say.
Ooh, that's a good one. I want to think about that.
You want to see him be better as well as everyone around him.
It's a good topic for the Big Pro Football Show. 5:30 tonight on CHSN. All right, right now you can be the sixth caller to the Scores contest line, 312-540-0670. 312-540-0670. Win your way to see our show live Friday, May 16th, the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Stage. Be part of the studio audience as we get you set for White Sox and Cubs, a crosstown series, special guests, and lots of Cubs Sox chatter. Plus, we are going to have popcorn, and it will be provided, most of it, by Nuts on Clark. Time for Transition Next. It's a transition on 670. The Score is brought to you by Webb Hyundai in Highland or Maryville, Indiana, in the region. Get the vehicle you deserve at the payment you want at Webb Hyundai. It will be Marshall Harris and Layla Rahimi. Rahimi and Harris, the new midday show on The Score next. Ruthie Polinsky's in for Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.